Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, you know, May is National Wetlands Month, and back to talk about wetlands is Katie Belfus. She's the Outreach Programs Director with the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. She'll tell us what's been going on with the organization and how our wetlands are faring. So, why are wetlands important to you? What would you like to know about how they work? Join the conversation. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And, of course, we would love to hear from you. And Katie Belfus, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
It's my pleasure. I just miss being with you in the studio.
Yeah, I sort of miss that for sure. May is Wetlands Month. We thought it might be a good idea to get the basics out of the way here. What is a wetland?
Well, a wetland is those places between the places that are always wet and the places that are always dry. So you've got your uplands and you've got your lakes and rivers, and wetlands are in the middle of those. And that means there's a lot of variability that happens there because water levels go up and down and things are different from season to season and year to year. So there's a lot of variability both in the kinds of wetlands that we have in Wisconsin, but also how long they're wet for, you know, how much of the year they're wet for. And we have many wetlands that are only wet for part of the year and so sometimes might get overlooked as being wetlands, but are super important.
Yeah. Is a wetland different from a swamp, let's say?
Well, that's a great question, and there's a lot of terms that people use to talk about wetlands, and swamp is sort of generally one that we hear. There is a technical swamp, and it's a forested wetland in Wisconsin, so it's one of the many wetland types we have in the state of Wisconsin, but a lot of folks use that word in a more broad way. But we do have wetlands that have trees in them. We have wetlands with open water. We have wetlands with vegetation that looks sort of grassy and prairie-like, and you might not even think it's wet there, but I bet if you walked out there in your shoes, you'd get wet.
Oh, man. Well, talk about the benefits of wetlands to our environment.
Sure. Well, a lot of folks, the first thing that comes to mind when we think about wetland benefits is wildlife, fish and wildlife habitat, and that's certainly very important. As you mentioned at the start of the show, three-quarters of our wildlife here in Wisconsin need wetlands. But even more important, when you think about the benefits that wetlands provide are the water cleaning and flood storage benefits that wetlands provide to our communities, because we see in areas where wetlands have been lost more flooding problems occurring and water quality problems occurring. And a lot of times that's from wetland loss in that watershed and also from landscape changes that have happened there that changes the way water moves across the landscape.
I remember reading an article about forget where it was in Texas, but the terrible flooding, and part of that was attributed to the fact that so many of the wetlands surrounding that city had been eliminated.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like that old story where they talk about you can take out one screw at a time or one thing at a time from an airplane and it might not fall apart for a while, but then suddenly the whole thing falls out of the sky, right? And the same thing is true with wetland loss, a little bit of loss here and there, you might not notice an impact, but the cumulative loss is what's really challenging for our communities over time. And we've lost, as you said at the top of the show, 50% of Wisconsin's wetlands have been lost in the last 150 or so years. And that's a lot. And that loss has a lot of impact on our water quality and our wildlife habitat and our ability to help protect communities from flooding.
You know, Marge in Rice Lake has a question that relates to what we were just talking about here, I think. Marge, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, hi there. I live in rural Rice Lake, Cumberland area, and my neighbor down the road out in the country has like a small wetland pond on right along the road. And I noticed as I drove by there the other day that he or she was filling it in, and I was disappointed and surprised, and I wondered if this person needs a permit for that, and if not, should I report him or her?
Well, that's a great question, and we have other folks on our staff who would be able to give you a more specific answer than what I will try to do here, so I welcome, if you don't get the answer you need, I welcome you to reach out to our office and one of our colleagues will get back to you about this, but in general, in Wisconsin, wetland fill is something that requires a permit, and it is something that is restricted and regulated by the Department of Natural Resources. Things are a little bit, it's not the same for every wetland in every part of the state because of the nature of the legislation and some changes that were made in the last couple of years. But generally speaking, a person should have a permit to fill a wetland, and it might be worth calling the DNR in your area to just find out where you can talk to figure out what the rules are specifically in your area. But generally speaking, yes, that's not something we would encourage as an organization, and that generally does require a permit from the Department of Natural Resources.
Okay, Marge, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, with your own question or comment at 1-800-642-1234, or go ahead and email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. You mentioned contacting the Wetlands Association. How is that done?
Oh, good. Thanks for mentioning that. The best way to reach us these days is by email. And info@wisconsinwetlands.org is the best email to reach us at. And the person who checks that, I'll just forward along to whomever on our staff is the most appropriate to answer your question. You can also visit our website, wisconsinwetlands.org. Our contact information is there, as well as a lot of information, whether you're a wetland landowner or a community member interested in wetlands. We have a lot of good information on that website.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the Wisconsin Wetlands Association was created, I think, in 1969.
Indeed.
Talk about the reasoning behind the original.
Well, a lot of folks were concerned about water quality and water issues happening in the state and wanting to make sure that wetlands were seeing protection and that we were having folks in the community paying attention to both wetland loss and wetland restoration. And so originally it was sort of an advocacy organization working on specific land-based cases where wetland loss was being proposed, or wetland conversion, I suppose is a better word, was being proposed to try to both educate the public about why that was a bad idea and figure out ways in the process of the development process to get involved to say, look, can we do this a different way that would, we might need to build that road or whatnot, but can we do it in a different way that wouldn't affect these wetlands? And so in one of the earliest examples that our organization worked on was actually the South Madison Beltline Highway through the top of Mud Lake there, trying to make sure that road, did the least amount of damage possible to that. And obviously there's a road there, so that wasn't a complete win, but we were successful in changing the design of that highway in order to better allow the flow of water.
So that was an accomplishment. What are some of your other major accomplishments?
Well, I think we've got a number of things. We focus mostly on helping people and communities care for wetlands, and so we have worked and done a lot of work for wetland landowners to help connect those important folks with resources that will help them care and restore and protect the wetlands that are found on their land. We have a publication for wetland landowners called My Healthy Wetland and a number of materials that go along with that. And we're doing some exciting work directly with communities now to help them address concerns that they have locally, whether it be flooding or dry rivers or damages to their infrastructure. To help them see how wetlands can be part of the solution to those problems, not that wetlands are the only part, but are a key part of solving some of those challenges. Another thing I'm particularly proud of is our Wetland Gems program and our efforts to designate really great wetlands in Wisconsin as internationally recognized wetlands of importance through the Ramsar Convention.
We have Karen in Madison up next with a comment or question. Hi, Karen. Thank you for joining.
Oh, thank you. I'm very interested in all things natural because however the health of the planet is, that's ultimately how healthy we are. But anyway, I had actually 4 points, and one was that I had heard, like, even huge metropolitan areas like Chicago, and here in Madison, we have wetlands connected to our sewage plant, but that huge wetlands could actually help purify the water before it goes back to wherever it goes, and it could even help big cities. And that's my one question, if that's the case. And also, I understand that Governor Walker signed a bill that smaller wetlands can be filled in and around Madison. I don't know if it was just Madison, but Wisconsin. And it was very disturbing that they were no longer protected, and whether or not that's true. And then the other question is about between Madison and Milwaukee is underground, is it called an aquifer? But it holds, it is a receptacle for all of the purified water that goes through the ground and is purified, and then we pump it out for water, provides water for us. And I see all, over and over again all along that way that, you know, they're building really important strip malls and places for people to eat and, you know, all kinds of things that really are not important. But anyway, asking about those three things. Thank you.
All right, Karen, thank you so much. Katie?
Boy, lots of good stuff there, Karen. And I'm glad you brought up that number two point about Governor Walker and the legislation about filling wetlands within communities, because it ties back to the earlier question and also to the answer I just gave about some of our proud accomplishments. One of the most important things our organization has done in the last 50 years was become the first state in the nation to protect isolated wetlands when those protections were removed from federal rules. At one time, federal Clean Water Act covered the protection of those small isolated wetlands, and when those were lost, our state was the first one to put those protections back. The more recent legislation, that was back in 2001-ish, the more recent legislation did carve away some of those protections, as you pointed out, Karen, within a certain distance from urban areas. It's become easier to get a permit to fill and convert wetlands. There is a requirement for wetland mitigation in those cases. So for every acre that you affect of wetlands, you're required to then restore so many acres, sort of to quote-unquote replace that loss. So it's not great, but it could have been a lot worse if it had all of the protections for those isolated wetlands been removed. So we were happy to at least minimize the damage, and we're still working with lots of folks across the state to make sure that those changes don't have a broader impact.
What about the water treatment plants and the wetlands that she was talking about, that Karen was talking about?
Yeah, well, I guess it's true that there's great wetlands at the sewage plant next to Madison here. It's actually some of the best birding in the spring because all the shorebirds love to be out there. And it's a good question that there are lots of ways that we can have natural water quality benefits with using nature as doing the job that she does naturally. And sometimes that's sort of at the pipe where the water comes out, as those wetlands are at the sewage treatment plant. But some more importantly even is higher in the watershed, those maintaining wetlands sort of throughout the system so that all the way along we have the natural ways of caring for and managing water as it moves through our watersheds. We have a great little 3-minute video that talks about the way wetlands across the landscape, whether it's upper, middle, or lower watershed wetlands, help manage water as it moves through watersheds. Having all of those wetlands sort of in all of those locations in a watershed is one of the ways we can really help not only with water quality, but sort of managing the quantity of water as well.
And I think she also talked about the aquifer between Madison and Milwaukee.
Yeah. And it's true everywhere that there are underground bodies of water, and one of the ways that water gets in there is by percolating through the soil down underground, and wetlands can be a really important place for that filtration to happen, for water to both move from the surface down into the groundwater, and then sometimes to actually be places where the groundwater comes out up from the groundwater up to the surface. So in both of those ways, wetlands are really important in maintaining the ability for the landscape to absorb that water, to refill those aquifers, is really important. And that's, you know, one of the things we talk about with communities when we work with them is where on the landscape is that happening and how can we improve that.
Talking today with Katie Belfus, Outreach Programs Director at the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Jane Rotunda, on-air producer, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include Wet Whistle Wine Festival and A Grace Hospice Care. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. More information at wpr.org/sponsor.
Support also comes from Tony Trapp Remodeling, offering full-service residential remodeling of kitchens, baths, additions, and renovations. Celebrating 18 years. Photos and more are at TonyTrappLLC.com.
We're taking a look at Wisconsin wetlands today on the show. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Katie Belfus, Outreach Programs Director of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. So what do you do to help wetlands? What questions do you have about them? I hope you'll join in. The number to call again, 800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. And let's take another call. Richard in Two Rivers, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, good morning, Larry. I make nesting boxes for ducks, and I wondered where and how you can donate them.
Well, that's a good question, and I'm afraid I'm not the right gal for that answer. You might connect with your local Ducks Unlimited chapter to see if they are able to connect you with their projects that might be interested in those.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. And the organizations like Ducks Unlimited, you kind of work in partnership in a way with them, with those kinds of organizations, do you not?
For sure,
at least
we
you
do.
Have the same goals, yeah.
Yeah, we share so many of the same goals, and each of us plays a little bit of a different role, and so it's really important to connect with each other and figure out, you know, ways to collaborate and improve our work together and cover the holes, so to speak, between our work. So definitely Ducks Unlimited's been a terrific partner of ours over the years.
How has the Wetlands Association been affected by COVID-19?
Well, of course, our whole staff is working from home and have been for a couple of months now, and we're doing all of our meetings, with video chats and phone calls and our board meetings as well. We've started a couple of new programs because I, for one, need some solace and some connection right now. And so we've done a couple of new things, creating video content and live possibilities for interacting to talk about wetlands. And so we have wetland coffee breaks every Friday morning at 10:30 where we invite our staff and colleagues and partners across the state to come in and talk with us about wetland-related topics, whether it's fish or birds or wetland community types. So those happen every Friday morning and are open to anybody who'd like to join. We're also promoting wetland poetry because sometimes these writings by folks like Thoreau and Leopold and Mary Oliver, they just provide such solace and comfort right now during these challenging times. And so we're having members of our organization read their favorite poetry and other wetland-related writings just to give us all that sort of balm that we might need right now.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Have you written any poems yourself?
I have not written any poems myself. It's perhaps a new thing that I need to take up in this time. But we do have a wonderful member, Mike Mossman, who is an ecologist but also a great poet, and he's been sharing his original poetry with us. And we combine it with video images to just make it a really nice experience.
Let's take another call. Greg in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Greg. Thank you for calling.
Hi, and thank you. I'd like guests to discuss the kind of paving cartel mutual beneficial scheme that has cities permitting concrete and asphalt installation over green space as opposed to permeable paving systems that can be planted. This leads to more runoff, which leads to more sewage infrastructure building. Seems not right.
Greg, thanks for calling. Katie, comment.
Well, it's always a challenge to balance the need for development and economic prosperity with the need to protect natural areas and infiltration and open space. And we are definitely an organization that promotes that the two are not necessarily in contradiction to one another, but it's a matter of how we go about doing it and the thought that we put into it to figure out ways to do both or to maximize the ability to do both. So I don't know a lot about permeable paving, and so I don't want to get into that specific topic, but I will say that a lot of our community work that we're working with communities and their planning and sort of long-term visioning is where is it appropriate, to direct development, and where is it appropriate to not have development so that we can protect those areas, so that we can do things like promoting water infiltration and aquifer recharge and flood abatement. So really doing smart development rather than just sort of moving forward without paying attention to those other issues, because in the long run, water has to have somewhere to go. And it's going to go somewhere no matter what, right? And so we need to figure out where does it naturally want to go, because it's going to be harder to build in those kinds of areas that are where the water wants to go and gather. So let's be smart about our planning and development and do it in a way that protects our communities and provides more of the benefits that wetlands can offer.
Thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. You have another new program, Wetland Walks.
Yeah, that was the one that I forgot to talk about just there. So thanks for bringing it up. You know, we recognize that there's a lot of people who are stuck inside their homes right now, and spring is upon us, right? Lots of really great things are happening outside, and not all of us are able to get out and enjoy that. So we are, appropriate and healthy way, when our staff and members have an opportunity to be outside, we're asking them to take some video of their experience with their wetland visits and share that. We're creating little short videos, just sharing some of those outdoor experiences with folks who might not be able to get out and see it themselves. So, for example, I took my kayak to Cherokee Marsh the other day and paddled by myself, and boy, I had a great time being out there in the sunshine and just discovering some things that I hadn't seen. I saw a bunch of sora rails, which are very, sort of secretive marsh birds that you don't get to see very often. You hear them, but you don't necessarily see them. And I got to see them, and I took it all on my little phone and we made a little video about that, just to be able to share those outdoor experiences and the wonder of what's going on outside with folks who might not be able to see it themselves.
Let's take another call. Derek in La Crosse, thank you for calling. Oop, I guess we lost Derek. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Vern called to say he couldn't stay online, but he says he thinks wetlands release a lot of methane and can cause global extinction problems. Could you speak to that, Katie?
My understanding is that wetlands are actually super important for trapping some greenhouse gases, particularly carbon dioxide, in the sediments that build up naturally in wetlands, and that maintaining wetlands for that value is really important. There are some places where wetlands are drying out, and the deposits, the sediments at the bottom of the wetlands that have held on to that carbon dioxide for so long, when they dry out, that gets released into the atmosphere. The same is true for permafrost, right? When you have frozen areas, that carbon dioxide is trapped there. And when those wetlands and frozen peatlands begin to thaw, that's all released. And so I'm not sure that I have that fact that he was sharing. So,
okay.
Generally speaking, I think all the data are that wetlands are a net positive for climate change.
Christina in Glenwood, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Hi there. Thank you. I've got two questions. I have wetlands on my property, which I'm very pleased about. And so I'm wondering, how do I manage them? And in addition to that, I've been hearing a lot of sandhill cranes in that area. I'm wondering, do sandhill cranes nest in the wetlands, or what other birds might nest in the wetlands?
Well, good way to go, having wetlands on your property and being interested in caring for them. We have, as I mentioned, a lot of information on our website and happy to connect with you further to connect you with some of the resources and information you might need for caring for your property. The most important thing you can do for caring for the property on your land is really get to know it. Where is the water coming from? Where is the water going to when it flows through your property? What's happening upstream? What's happening inside the wetland? How is that working? Getting to know your wetland then helps you know where the help is needed, right? What kinds of restoration can you do or management can you do to improve the health of your wetlands? So take a look at our website, wisconsinwetlands.org, and look at the pages that we have for landowners, because there's a lot of great information there. We also have, as I said, there's a printed handbook that we can mail to you. Even in this time of social distancing, we figured out how to get that done. So we can get you a copy of that book. You just can order that right on our website. Now, cranes, I'm going to defer part of your question to the second part of this show, because there's going to be a fella on who knows a little bit about, more about cranes than I do. But yes, sandhill cranes nest in wetlands, and there's a lot of them about the landscape right now. We're seeing them all. They were even hanging out in the hockey rink by my house, you know, the all grassy right now, but that was their favorite place for a little while. So there are lots of cranes on the landscape. They do breed in wetlands, and there's a lot of other great birds that breed in wetlands. So by maintaining the property that you have, you are providing homes for lots of great critters.
And Christina, thank you so much. Sarah in Appleton has a question. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, I am about to build a house, actually, and our property is surrounded by wetlands on three sides, but they're really forested wetlands. And a lot of the trees that have grown out of the fill that's in the middle of this area where we're going to build will obviously be gone, and we would like to replace some of that habitat with trees that make sense to have adjacent to a wetland. So I'm wondering where I can go to find out which trees and shrubs would be the best kind to encourage or to actually plant to grow in those areas.
Well, that's a great question, and thank you for being, wanting to do the best that you can for the landscape around you, given that your house is going to be there too. One of the resources I can point you to is the Department of Natural Resources maintains a list of all of the native landscaping nurseries that we have in the state of Wisconsin. And so you can, if you go to the DNR's website and use a keyword to look for nursery, native nursery, you should be able to find that list. If you have troubles, send me an email and I'll be happy to try to connect you with that. But I think a native landscaper or native garden center near you might be the best ones to help you, because they will know your soils and they will know the kinds of plants and trees and shrubs that would be best found in your neighborhood. They probably will also have some information about what species would be great in your particular area. The other group that you might think about is Wild Ones. That's a volunteer-based organization that helps folks with native landscaping, and so that might be another resource to check out.
Yeah, good resource. Thank you, Sarah, for calling. Well, Jeff and Racine, what's on your mind?
Hi, Larry and Katie. I was wondering, Katie, what the impact of, for instance, urban rain gardens, which I have, 150 square feet of gardening, takes care of all the runoff from my roof. And if more people would do that kind of thing, what would be the impact on the watershed?
Well, I think in general, rain gardens are a terrific thing. We're putting one in our on our property this year, and certainly it's something that folks in urban landscapes can do, as you said, to control the runoff coming off their own individual property. So I've got nothing against rain gardens. I think they're great. I don't know the data about if everybody were to put one in, how that would affect. I mean, it would be positive, certainly. Our organization tends to focus a bigger picture actions about ways that communities at a broader scale can manage runoff with natural infrastructure. So I don't have the specifics about rain gardens, but I say thumbs up. Let's do it.
Yeah.
The more the merrier.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it. Mary in Manitowoc, it's your turn now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. We have some land that's north of Michicot. We bought about 15 years ago, and it has got a small isolated wetland on it. And we're happy with that. But, you know, it was a, like a boggy land that had puddles in it and that sort of thing. It wasn't that much water in it. But in the last, the township built a road along the edge of our property, and that's caused it's blocked the drainage from the wetland, and it's caused water to build up there in every year in the spring. It's now, instead of being maybe a foot deep or 6 inches deep in the wetlands, it's 10 to 12 feet deep, the water is. And we've tried to find regulations to see if they should have, you know, what they should have done. We think they should have put a culvert under the road. But we can't, we've been wading through the regulations for the DNR, and we haven't been able to figure it out. And I'm wondering if there's somebody at the DNR we can talk to about this to find out if they should have done this, or if they should be adding a culvert or what. Do you have any advice?
That's a great question, and again, I'm gonna defer to my colleagues who have more familiarity with specifically with who within the DNR would be able to help you, and where in that process, where in the regulations would be the best place to look to find a solution for this. But Mary, it's a really important issue that you bring up. Lots of times, the changes that we put in on the landscape, whether it's road building or house building or whatnot, has consequences to the flow of water across the watershed. And in some cases, making areas drier, and in some cases, making areas a lot wetter. And you might think that a wetter wetland is somehow a better or healthier wetland, but as you have pointed out, having more water can sometimes be very detrimental to a wetland, particularly if the seasonality of the higher water is different from what it might have been normally. As I've mentioned at the start of the show, it's very common for some wetlands to only be wet in part of the year, and many of these sort of small, isolated, boggy wetlands that are only are that kind of wetland that are only wet in the spring and then they dry out. But if we back up water, as is the case here, you might have water a lot more water, as you clearly pointed out, for a longer period of time in the year. So if you would email our office, info@wisconsinwetlands.org, with a little more information about your particular situation, we'll make sure somebody can get back to you with at least point you in the right direction about who to talk to at the DNR about that.
So it's info@wisconsinwetlands.org?
That's right. That's exactly right.
Mary, I hope that helps. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
And it's a good point for folks who are doing driveway or other development projects to make sure they're thinking about sort of water flow and putting in those culverts, because they can be really important.
Yeah. What happens in wetlands at this time of year?
Well, lots of wetlands are wet. Better this time of year than they might be in other times of the year. One of the really fun things that happens in the early parts of the year when our snows are melting and that first spring rain comes is all these ephemeral ponds pop up to capture all of that water. And who shows up in all those little ponds but frogs and toads and salamanders? And they require these beautiful little ephemeral ponds in the spring for their mating and reproduction, because their babies need a water body without fish, right? Because fish want to eat little baby frogs and little baby eggs, frog eggs. So these spring ephemeral wetlands are so important for our herps and whatnot. And the sounds this time of year are so great, because all those guys are calling and calling and calling trying to find their mate. So that's really, really fun. So the fact that these little wetlands, these ephemeral ponds, they warm up faster in the spring because they're very shallow. And so you get warmer temperatures in these waters, and that's very helpful for reproduction for these critters. But also there's no fish, right? And so because they're isolated from streams and creeks, they don't get fish living in there, and that provides a safer environment for reproduction. Of course, birds are coming back in abundance, and wetlands are full of birds right now. Wetlands are really important on migration. Even if the birds aren't staying there during the summer, they might come through, and they really need those spots for feeding on their big journeys. So lots of great stuff happening in wetlands right now.
Keith in Woodboro wonders, should he put sand near the wetland, his wetland, for turtles? He noticed a lot of turtles sitting on logs in the area. Would sand give them more space?
I don't know how to answer that question. Generally speaking, I would say let the turtles figure it out for themselves. I think sometimes people, in their quest to be helpful to wildlife, think that we need to take care of them And sometimes that's true, but more often than not, those critters know what they need, and they're going to go find it. And so not messing with their landscape is more important than messing with their landscape, if that makes sense. Give them some space and let them go about their business.
And, you know, you talked about how great it is to be around a wetland at this time of the year. Where can we find a list of public wetlands?
Well, one of the lists I can recommend is about 10 years ago, our organization designated what we call wetland gems, which are high-quality wetlands representing all the different kinds of wetlands we have in Wisconsin and located all across the state so that we can sort of showcase the diversity of our wetlands in Wisconsin. So we have on our website, if you type wetland gems into the search bar, I guess that's the easiest way for me to describe it. Once you get to wisconsinwetlands.org, we have a list of those 100 sites across the state of Wisconsin, and there's a fact sheet for each one that has information about the property and also gives you some information about how you can find out about visiting that property. We don't own any land in Wisconsin. That's not what we do, but we do help partner with groups that do own and protect land, so there's lots of DNR properties amongst that. There's locally owned properties, properties owned by land trusts who are managing the wetlands, and so those can be some terrific, and not all of them are sort of big areas that might draw a lot of people. Some of them are quite small and lovely. So that would be a great place to check out our wetland gems list. And state natural areas are another one. Again, you want to make sure you check the safer at home guidelines, so make sure you're going to the ones that are all open, because some of them aren't. But state natural areas also have a lot of wetlands amongst them.
What should we be aware of when visiting a wetland?
Well, I think dressing appropriately, having the right footwear, because certainly, especially this time of year, you're gonna get wet feet, and that's sometimes part of the fun, you know. And if you're well prepared for it, then it's not a predicament. It's part of the adventure of what you're doing. I would encourage folks to clean their boots between visits to different locations, because we do have invasive species all across Wisconsin, whether it's garlic mustard or buckthorn or reed canary grass or lots of other different things. And sometimes we don't think about our boots as a source of seeds for those. And so if you're visiting a high-quality natural area, just go in with clean boots so you're not bringing seeds in with you. I think enjoy yourself, wear the right stuff, and come with the right attitude.
There we go. Well, Katie, it's always a pleasure to be able to talk with you. Thank you so much for being with us today, and we'll look forward to talking with your partner.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it as well.
Katie Balfus is the Outreach Programs Director of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Great to have her with us. And we did have one question about sandhill cranes, but we're going to learn a lot more about not only sandhills, but other cranes as well as we visit with Rich Balfus. Rich coming up next on the Ideas Network.